Hey there, just to give you a heads up on this podcast, you're going to hear a couple kids screaming in the back. Those aren't my kids. Those are Parrish's kids. And I didn't even really hear them when I was recording the podcast, but as I was cutting the audio on this thing, I heard them screaming in the back. I guess it's because I have four kids and I don't notice that kind of stuff anymore. I actually think it's kind of funny. I hope you think it's funny too, and I hope you enjoy this podcast.
I wanted to be a Bloomington Jefferson Jaguar varsity hockey player. Those guys were kings to me. I remember going to the game, standing there, giving them high fives on the way out to the ice, and head to toe baby blue, and I thought they were gods.
From Link Lake, it's How I Got Here. The stories behind the youth, high school, college, and professional sports journey, where it leads, and what we learn along the way. I'm Corey Koski, and on today's show, how Mark Parrish went from wearing the baby blues of Bloomington Jefferson to the NHL in sunny Florida. When I was growing up, I wanted to play hockey, and I wanted to play in the NHL. I was torn between going to college or the Western Hockey League, also known as the WHL or the Dub. I knew that the WHL was the fastest way to get me to the NHL, but a lot of guys' careers died there because it was such a tough league. I also knew that I had a slim chance to get to the NHL. The typical path is either or. In all my years around hockey, I have never heard of somebody going from college to the WHL. Mark Parrish did just that. This is his story. So what sports did you play early on?
Oh man, I tried them all. Baseball was my first and true love. As long as I can remember, every single summer I played baseball. I don't remember a summer without baseball. Besides that, I tried football, soccer, downhill skiing. It was kind of fun, but I was really bad at that. I found those poles hurt more than they were fun to go around. What else did I try? I just about anything. If I had a friend that played it, I played it. And played hockey because my older brother did. He was the first one in the family to play hockey. My dad was football, baseball growing up, and we knew nothing about it. He fell in love with it. I've said this for years, and I do feel bad sometimes that I was the one that made the NHL and not him, because he loves the game more than I do. Not that I don't love the game, but that guy, he could stay on the ice year-round, 24/7, never get tired of it, never get bored. He just absolutely loves the game of hockey, and hence he's working with it now as an instructor.
So a lot of people tell me, a lot of ex-athletes or current athletes, whatever, say that baseball was their first love. You don't know how many times I've heard that baseball is their
really?
First love.
That's awesome.
And they end up landing on hockey. Were you not good enough at baseball? What happened?
Actually, my dad says I was, and I guess he did. There was a couple of phone calls from some colleges. I don't know. Minnesota was one of them. I don't remember. There's a couple colleges that called, but it was later on my junior year or so, or senior year, and by then it was, I think, my freshman year or so. I made this team Minnesota for hockey, and people kind of started talking to me. Next thing you know, as a sophomore, I'm getting letters from colleges, and I kind of had this realization that maybe I should focus more on hockey because it sounds like I'm better at that than I am baseball. And that's all I started. Otherwise, I was all baseball.
So when did you start focusing in on playing just hockey?
Oh, college. Even through high school, I played Legion baseball. I played baseball varsity. I played other sports. I was going to play football, but then I broke my leg as a sophomore.
Turner went down the slide and had this mud all over his butt.
Perfect.
Okay, well, tell him not to sit down on anything and stay out there until we get back. We're done. Sounds like a normal emergency. I just can't. I really truly didn't just focus on hockey until I had a D1 scholarship. I played baseball all summer long. I mean, I did more things during the summer, but most of the time I didn't even look at my equipment until winter. I couldn't wait for baseball to start.
So what made you so good at hockey?
I believe especially because of my specialty, the specialist and being a power play guy, being in front of the net, tipping pucks, hand-eye coordination, I all goes to baseball. And I was also very comfortable in traffic with my feet. So, and I think as I played quarterback for football, it's, man, when you say hike, it's mayhem. It's just madness. People, bodies everywhere. So that helped me out being comfortable in front of the net and traffic in the corners. And playing soccer, I was fine with pucks in my feet. I was comfortable with all of those things I attribute to other sports, especially the redirect, the tipping, the hands in front of the net, the hand-eye, because my dad made me bunt on two strikes so many times. And if I didn't get that thing in play, I knew I was going to hear about it later.
So what kind of – so your parents you talked about your dad here. What were your parents like growing up playing youth sports? Were they – On your case, did they support you? Did they push you?
They were awesome. My brother and I have talked about that a lot, and how lucky we were to have parents who they were. They were incredibly supportive. There was never a time where they're like, no, you're not playing that sport. No, you're not. They just found a way, whether they could make it, whether it was financially, whether it was just time. They always made sure if we wanted to play a sport, we did. And the only thing. Dad, obviously there was moments, teaching moments in there about games, especially baseball. That's his baby. But it was more, do you work hard? Do you have fun? I never got in trouble for making mistakes, if I had a bad game or anything like that. The only thing I could tell was if my dad didn't think I worked hard, he was just a little quiet on the way home. He could just tell if I wasn't, but it was all his thing was effort. Can't control anything, but you can control your effort.
So did he wear you out on the car ride home?
Not at all. Not at all. It would, did you work hard? Did you have fun? That was about it. He would ask questions about the game, where I'd kind of realize that was how was his way of teaching. But no, not at all. Never. Unless, and it wasn't even, like I said, the only time I could tell was he was disappointed. And you just, when you're a kid, disappoint your dad. It's like the worst thing ever. I'm hoping my kids get to that some point, but we'll see.
So you go through youth sports, you're playing multiple sports, you go to Bloomington Jefferson, and you win a state tournament. When during that year did you guys know you had a special season, and how did your coach prepare you for that? And you played, you know, it's exciting to play.
Yeah, that was growing up. Like I said, until I started getting letters recruited from college, I had no idea. All I wanted to do was I wanted to be a Bloomington Jefferson Jaguar varsity hockey player. Those guys were kings to me. I remember going to the game, standing there, giving them high fives on the way out to the ice, and head to toe baby blue, and I thought they were gods. To me, playing at the state tournament in those clear boards at the Civic Center, wearing baby blue, that was the end-all be-all. That was the greatest thing I could ever achieve in hockey. Never thought even remotely that I was going to go past that. And the good thing about it was I came in the middle of a dynasty. So my freshman year, 92, they won. And everybody said then my sophomore year that we had a better team, and which we actually did. We went 28-0. We had 18 guys. 13 of those players on that team went Division I full rides. Four guys on that team played in the NHL.
Wow.
One high school team, 1 year. And that's, and we can, if you go to the 92 team, that adds another NHLer and a couple more D1 guys. And we pushed each other. I mean, I was surrounded by a lot of good talent. And I think that's one of the things that kept me very humble, was there was just a lot of great hockey players. Mike Crowley, Nick Checo, Dan Treble. I mean, all these guys that Mr. Hockey, you know, Hobie Baker, finalists, NHLers. And I was that young guy keeping up. So the pressure that I felt, Tom Settle and John Bianchi didn't, as our coaches, didn't have to put any pressure on us. We had pressure to keep up. The older guys were leaders. They held everybody accountable, but in a good way. Looking back, I can't believe how mature those guys were at high schoolers. If you didn't go down, if you didn't try and practice, if you didn't give it your all, if you didn't keep up, and it started with the seniors. That's the one thing Satterdahl and Bianchi did really well. All the pressure was on the seniors, the older guys. Hey. And it's true, now that I'm coaching high school, you can see that the other players look up to them. The seniors got to be your best guys. They got to have the best attitudes. They have to, in a way, hold people accountable. Otherwise, the other guys, the younger guys, are just going to, you know, do whatever they want. And I think that was it. Just trying to, each year, trying to keep up with the older guys. And then when I was a senior, it was the same thing. And I felt like there was a standard I have to keep up to. So with the pressure to, I didn't really feel pressure to win. It was just the pressure to keep it to a Jefferson standard, a Jaguar pride of just doing your best no matter what happens.
So how did they keep you guys accountable?
You know, a lot of it was very similar to effort. It was unselfishness. That's the one thing I remember the most, is guys getting called out for whether it was a selfish play, reacting selfishly, taking a bad penalty, you know. And Mike Crowley was probably the best at it, where he would just talk to you. He was like my dad. He never yelled at you. You could just tell by the tone of his voice if you were. And he was just such an awesome guy, and one of the guys that everybody one respected on the ice. I mean, broke Phil Housley's record for points by a defenseman, one of the greatest high school hockey players of all time, bar none. But he was just as awesome off the ice. I mean, he's just a great guy, very humble, always put the team first. Whenever a young guy, anybody needed a ride, whatever, he always helped everybody out. And he had set that bar so high that I honestly felt like I was just trying to keep up with those guys.
Coming up, Mark does the unheard of. Goes from college hockey to the WHL. Stay with us. I'm Corey Koski, and you're listening to How I Got Here from Link Week. Hey, this is Corey Koski. I'm the former major leaguer that got this crazy idea of using sports stories to hopefully encourage youth and high school athletes and their parents as they are on their journey. Since retiring, I have coached over 85 youth sports teams over the last 12 years, and I have seen our world change. Our kids and their parents are more insecure than ever. We are comparing others' best presentation of themselves against how we view ourselves. We are comparing our real life to another's highlight reel. This is not fair. Real life is full of adversity. You will see in all our stories, we are all going to get knocked down. The successful people get back up and dust themselves off and continue to move forward. There is so much good that can come out of adversity if we allow it. As my mom said, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. We are looking for sponsors to help us on our mission of connecting youth sports for good. If you'd like to sponsor our podcast, you can email me at corey.koski@linkleet.com. That's corey.koski@linkleet.com. With the right partners, we can connect youth sports for good and change this world.
Hey, welcome back to How I Got Here from Link Lead. So, Mark Paris has just graduated from Bloomington Jefferson, and he's going to play college hockey somewhere. He decides to go to St. Cloud State, but there is a process to this decision.
So after you graduate, you go to St. Cloud State.
Mm-hmm.
How did that all play out? Did you have multiple offers from multiple schools, or was this your one offer?
No, I had multiple offers. I would say that it was, luckily enough, I didn't grow up being a big Gopher guy. My parents, they didn't watch hockey. If I watched hockey, it was the North Stars. Both parents didn't go to the U. They went to Augsburg. Everyone else at Jefferson went through Minnesota. There was a joke through the early to mid-90s that Bloomington Jefferson was the minor league system for the Gophers. Everybody went there. And I didn't feel that pressure or anything I just didn't really watch the Gophers. I was a North Star guy. And Matt Cullen and I went a few visits to North Dakota, Lake Superior State, Miami, Ohio, and Denver. St. Cloud, I liked the distance. I liked it being about an hour and a half, hour from mom and dad, so it was close enough they could come watch the games or if I had to zip home, but far enough where they'd have to call first. There was no surprises, no surprise visits. And Matty Cullen, when we went to our visit on St. Cloud, there was a lot of things I liked. We both liked North Dakota a lot. They were graduating 11 seniors that year. They had to play us, whether they liked it or not, so we looked at it as an opportunity. At that point, once I realized the college was kind of taken care of, then the next step was all of a sudden it's NHL scouts that are talking to you, and that's where I started to get an inkling like, holy cow, this might go past high school. And on our visit, Matt Cullen and I, we realized we had that bond that we wanted to play in the NHL. And what was going to be the best route? I was a goal scorer. He was a centerman, passer. Perfect. They have to play us, 11 seniors. let's do it. We went to St. Cloud, and we both just had a blast there for 2 years. And as soon as he signed with Anaheim, I knew I was going too, because that's my passer.
Yeah. So they. So what was the transition like from high school? Now you're away from home for the first time. You have time to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What was that transition like from high school to college?
It was good. My brother going there at the same time, so there was a common ground there. Other than that, I knew Matt Cohen a little bit. Didn't know anybody else. There was a lot more crying than I was expecting. I thought there was going to be a lot of enthusiasm right away, but no, I remember being just sad. I'm just a kid, you know, missing mom and dad, you know, missing some of my buddies back home. Just scared. You know, was I good enough to cut it at this level at Division I? You know, even though they graduated 11 seniors, am I still going to play? Because there was 14 freshmen that came in and kind of did the math quick in my head that doesn't mean we're all playing. And I just remember a lot of nerves, and then just kind of getting settled in once you get to know the team a little bit, and you know, as anything else, they become your family and your best friends.
So how did you deal with those nerves on that transition?
You know, I just tried to hang out with my brother and teammates as much as I could, try and keep my mind busy.
So you play 2 years at St. Cloud, and then you go off to the Western Hockey League. A lot of kids make a decision, do I go to the Western Hockey League or do I go to play college hockey? You played both. What was the difference between the WHL and collegiate hockey?
You know, and at that point, there was quite a bit. It's the gap has shrunk now between the games I've played, but not then. It was went from a wide open playing on Olympic size college hockey's wide open Olympic size sheets, a lot of speed, and I mean that we worked. I vividly remember working on like picking, just completely interference penalties. Should have been penalties back then, but that was. The WCHA, that was the play. Everybody, you could set up picks. And it was insane how much you did that. Where you go to the Western League, and it's the NHL. Every single rule that the NHL has, if they don't have it implicated instantly, they will do that the next year. All of a sudden, there was this clutching and grabbing. It wasn't quite as wide open. I didn't score a goal for, I think, the first, like, 10 games. I went from tying for the lead to the WCHA the year before in goals, and I couldn't find the back of the net to save my life. I couldn't. It took me a while to figure out the game with just how tight everybody played, how much more physical it was, how much more just kind of the clutching and grabbing, like I said, the D-men, once they got a hold of you, I mean, it just felt like they could just bear hug you, and that was it. And having to start to learn how to, not just the adjustment for the ice, but learning to play more in traffic as opposed to college hockey. It just didn't seem to, it's more spread out, whether it was the Olympic size sheet, whether it was the way the game was played, whether it was coaching, whatever it was, it just seemed like there was so much room to operate out there. Then you go to the Western League and everybody's right there. Playing in the Western League saved me a year in the minors. There's no doubt for me on that. And if I'm gonna struggle with that with kids, and I was overager, 21. If I was gonna struggle with that style of play against younger kids, what would I have done at the pro level?
Yeah. You know, like. So you go from, I went from Canada to the U.S., and it was quite the transition just dealing with Americans. You know, I in one of the articles I wrote on Linklate, I talked about the first time I got introduced to American beer and what these guys were doing around the keg. You're going from American to, yeah, you're still playing in America, but you're playing with a bunch of Canadians in the WHL. What was that transition? Because they came from complete different background, and these guys in the dub at that time were hard-nosed guys. Like,
I don't want to say I was intimidated, but it was a little intimidating. What I loved about it most was when we were playing college hockey, when I was playing at St. Cloud, there was myself, Matt Cullen, and maybe one other guy that were focused or even thinking about moving on to play pro hockey. Like, they're there to get an education. They're fine with it. Not that they didn't work hard. Not that they didn't enjoy playing hockey, but there wasn't that drive as opposed to you go to the Western League, every single player on that ice, every single kid in that locker room, goal is to get to the NHL. Is it going to be a reality? Well, it can't. Of course not. But being surrounded by that passion and by how much they, how much, and I hate saying this, of course, in front of a Canadian, how much more they cared about the game. It was evident how much more as a group, as a whole, they cared about the game. And it was, I learned more on how keeping people accountable. I saw more guys get in people's faces. That didn't happen in college hockey where somebody totally just get into his face passionately. No, they didn't care about having a beer afterwards, for crying out loud. But I learned what it was to not only hold anyone else, someone else accountable, but yourself as well, and which was probably more important.
So did they rookie you?
Oh, you know what? I got kind of lucky. They did, but being the 21-year-old on the team and the one that could get them beer in Seattle, they weren't too mean. But, yeah, I did a little bit. Wasn't nearly as bad what I got at St. Cloud. St. Cloud was pretty bad.
Oh, so they rookied you.
Oh, yeah. That was – and we had – like I said, there was 14 of us stuck in a bathroom all naked trying to memorize these two paragraphs. And if you couldn't get the paragraph, if you couldn't memorize it right or close enough, get back into the bathroom. I mean, there was guys that were in there for a long time. Luckily enough, Matt Cullen and I didn't drink, and they weren't going to force us to drink, which now looking back on it, it was probably worse because they were just pulling stuff out of the kitchen, just molasses, salt, pepper, anything they could grab, Tabasco sauce, filling it into a little cup. If we screwed up, take it down. I mean, that was way worse. I think Matt made that joke, like, I think I'd rather have the tequila.
So now you get drafted. So you're in a dub. You get drafted out of a dub. What was it like going from the dub and now playing your first game? Well, even before you played your first game, you got traded. You got drafted by the Avalanche.
Mm-hmm. And then traded to Florida.
And so what did they call you and say, hey, man, hey, I know you haven't played for us, but we're going to trade you. Like, how did that go down?
I had no idea. I didn't have a clue. I knew if I played because of my age, the way it worked out at that time with the CBA, if I hadn't signed with Colorado by July 1, I was a free agent. I would have been a free agent. So they felt pressure to either sign me or they didn't want to lose me completely. And they had some pretty good guys. There was Drury came in, Hayduke. I mean, Colorado went on to, obviously they had some success and ended up winning, which sometimes sticks in the back of my head. But there would have been no guarantee that I would have been on that team. That it might have been in the American League. I mean, they were pretty deep and they had young talent. So it is what it is there. I didn't think about it at the time. I should have probably been paying attention to realize they were going to trade me at the deadline. I didn't get a phone call. I didn't get anything. My GM from Seattle was the one that called me. He's like, oh, sunny Florida, right? I'm like, huh? You just got traded to Florida? Did I? That's how it went down. And it was just two minutes later, Brian Lawton calls. Like, well, you got traded to Florida. I'm like, yeah, I just found that out. So it went there, and they felt pressure to sign me right away. So it was a great. I signed right away, went to New Haven, played for the Beast of New Haven for one game because that was all that was left, and you had to play a certain amount of games in the American League to be eligible for the playoffs. And I got bag skated for 2 weeks after that, after they were in the playoffs.
Why'd they bag skate you?
They bag skated everybody, the old Black Aces. So whoever's around for the playoffs, they call in young guys. Just like the NHL will bring up a bunch of the young guys once the minor league system's over to experience it, be part of the playoffs, get a taste of it. But they're going to make you earn it, too, at the same time. Knowing full well that I was never going to play, they wanted to test you. It was see what kind of guy you were. It was a character test. Are you going to push yourself? Are you going to pout? Are you going to get angry? Are you going to be able to take it? Are you going to, what kind of guy? Are you going to be laughing, joking around about it? Are you going to understand what the game is and what it takes?
So when you signed, what does that mean? Did you get a signing bonus? Did you get...
Yeah, I got extremely lucky because of... I was a 78, 79, second or third of the last pick of the third round. And I ended up having a good year in Seattle where I scored 54 and 54. And I went from a third rounder we were negotiating with Colorado, like, I think it was like 150 grand to sign, and which for a kid with two parents as teachers, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's some obscene amount of money. And to then that following summer, signing with Florida with like the second or third highest contract behind, I think it was Thornton, like just behind Thornton up to that time within the new CBA, without the ridiculous signing bonuses. But that was, yeah.
So you signed, so Colorado gave you a signing bonus?
Nope, no, Florida.
Florida, so yep. It was all Florida.
Florida, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it was, blew my mind that just to sign in the NHL and the first check that comes in with that's six figures, it still kind of blows my mind. How the heck did I do this? Yeah. How did this happen?
So you're going through your first year. Your first year, you have 37 points for your rookie season. What was it like in the difference between the WHL and the NHL? Because in WHL, you're on the bus. You know, I don't know if they had sleeping components for you, sleeping parts on the bus, but moving from the bus to now you're flying. Like, how did you handle that transition?
I was extremely lucky to have a great core group of older guys on that team in Florida. Scott Mellenby, Dino Cicerelli, Ray Whitney, Brett Hedekin, Johan Garpenlöf, one of my favorite Swedes ever, Sean Burke. I could go on with more and more names, but they were spectacular to me on teaching me how to be a professional from day to day, because it was such a transition being... I still felt like I was a kid, but in the Western League, where, you know, billet parents, I had another teammate with me. Practices weren't until after high school because of the young kids. So you kind of, your day was set where wake up, breakfast, lunch, go to practice, come back, dinner, and go to bed. So it didn't seem like there was as much downtime, even though there probably was the exact same amount. Also you get to pro hockey and you practice in the morning and it's noon. What are you going to do the rest of your day? You know, it was more of a, as much as the transition to learn pro hockey, keep up on ice, off ice was just as important, if not more important, making sure you're taking care of yourself, you're not getting in trouble like most young guys do, or still some young guys like to do, unfortunately. But they drug me everywhere they went. I never spent, even though I lived alone, I rarely spent any time. If they were going to lunch, they always made sure I was going to lunch. If they were going fishing, if they were going to go hit golf balls, whatever it was, they just inundated me with it. They kept me around to where I was forced to learn how to be a pro without them really saying much. I had so much respect for them and their character that I just followed suit.
So you have, so you're hanging out with them. Did you ever get in trouble? Or they kept you out of trouble?
Yes and yes. There was still that kind of, it's different now with the work hard, play hard mentality. We still have some of those 80 guys that played in the 80s in the NHL, which, I mean, there was a few guys, Dino Cicerelli, I love him to death. I mean, it was after practice. It was five, six beers every day. I'd go home, have dinner, go to bed or whatever, take a nap, have dinner with the family, wake up, do it the next day. I don't know how he did that for 22 years, but that was the way they played. And he'd be honest, he's like, this is nothing compared to what I did when I was your age, for crying out loud. What did you do then? I'm not telling you. But that was part of it. And it was, you know, being pro, like how you take care of yourself. Like, okay, fine, if you're going to do that. Dino was the first one in every time. You could always tell if he had must have had a few more bottles of wine, because he wasn't just biking and sweating it out. He was in a sauna with a bike, sweating it out. When he wheeled that thing in the sauna, you knew Dino really had some fun the night before. But he was one of the most hardest working guys. I mean, yeah, he was going to play hard, but he absolutely worked his butt off. I blew my mind. 600 goals, and he did goal scoring drills every day after practice. And every single day, he'd grab me. Come on, kid. Like, just, there was no saying no. I wasn't going to say no to anything. He was my hero growing up. Dino Cicerelli for the North Stars, for crying out loud. And, they forced me to become professionals.
So you play a couple years with the Panthers, then you get traded to the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at your numbers, your numbers go down.
Mm-hmm.
That first year that you get traded. So you go from Florida and you're around all these guys. Now you're traded, now it's something different.
Is there a reason why those numbers went down? What was your mindset through that?
Looking back on it, it's funny. I realize I didn't at the time, whether it was just youth, you know, immature, whatever it was, but I was bitter. I wasn't happy about the trade. We were an up-and-coming Florida. We were one of those teams that was on its way up. We just made the playoffs for a couple of years, disappointing exit. But, yeah, we were on the rise to the worst team in the league and a bunch of young guys that it wasn't – I would stay after and shoot pucks and work on drills, and I'd be the only one on the ice. Well, it didn't take long for me, of course, to – instead of me sticking to my guns and doing what I knew that the professionals that played for 20 years did, I kind of got caught up in that, and I was just kind of be bitter. And I couldn't wait to get off the ice after practice, and and 3 weeks before I got traded, I remember having a phone call with Chuck Fletcher and saying, oh, you and Bure, you're going to be our two top, you know, goal scorers, you know, 1-2 punch at the right side for the next 10 years. 3 weeks later, I get traded to the Islanders. Whatever happened to that 10-year thing? I'm sure that probably was part of it where I was a little bit bitter, but that, you know, not being a good team. And I didn't put in the effort. I didn't put in the work that I had the years before. Not that I expected for it to be easy. Not that I was lazy, but because of my mindset, my attitude. You know, at the time, I didn't see it. Now looking back on it, it's one of my biggest regrets. It was a wasted year for me. Because I didn't do anything. One of my prime young years. And it was all just because I was bitter. I got traded. I mean, that's part of the game. That's part of being a pro.
So the fans and other people that just don't get this dynamic, they'll say, well, dude, you're a professional. Just turn the page. This is what you do. This is what you pay to do. Enjoy it. Personally, that frustrates me because there's still the emotional component of it. Like, why don't you think you were able to turn the page on that? Was it when Fletcher, were you gearing on Fletcher's promise? And then all of a sudden, this was complete disappointment from that? Like, what really sent you down this road?
Yeah, I think it's foolish pride. Just foolish pride. I played 2 years in Florida, first year as a pro, I'm assuming it's the same in baseball. You're not being selfish, but you're focused on staying there. You want to make the playoffs. You want the team to win. But in the back of your mind, after every game, you're like, okay, God, I hope I get to make the next game. I hope I make the lineup, right? That's your focus. It's natural. There's no other way to go about it. Then the second year turns pretty quickly to me where, all right, now it's about winning. Now I want to be on a good team. I want a Stanley Cup. And I think that had a lot to do with it where we were good in Florida. I felt comfortable there. My confidence level was much better the second year. And, yeah, I think it had a lot to do with Fletcher. Now, it's no big deal. It should not have played that role. I should have gone out there because now I look back on it, well, everybody's watching no matter what. Even if you're on a bad team, who cares? You got to go out there and do your best. Attitude and effort. You cannot control where you are, who you're playing for, who you're playing with. Coach makes decisions, but you can't control your attitude and effort. And I did not do a good enough job controlling my attitude that year. And it spilled over into my effort. And, yeah, I think it was just flat-out foolish pride. Like, how could they trade me? They just told me that I was going to be their next goal for 10 years. Well, yeah, we both know that. It's the way pro sports is.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show this week. What did I learn from today's podcast? I wrote a story on linklead.com about pride hurting. Mark dealt with the same thing. Pride can be our greatest barrier to success. I have played with a lot of guys in the minor leagues where pride cost them their career. Episode 2 is going to be out Wednesday. Mark talks about the NHLPA breaking into his email account as they were going through the strike. Make sure to check out the website, www.linklead.com, for more stories. If you have any questions or want to have a discussion about anything you heard in this podcast or anything that you want to share, ask me on Linklead's Facebook page. If you'd like to Twitter us, you can do that at Linklead47. I'm Corey Koski. You've been listening to How I Got Here from Linklead. A special thanks to Wade Beavers, Sean Lee, Jim Koslowski, and Maria Holmes.